Oh, good lord, here we go, Slashers and Survivor Girls. It's another edition of the Creepin' It Real Horrorcast. Dumpster Fire Month. I'm your host, Meg.
I'm Lunchbox, and I'm...
Are you mad at yourself yet?
Sorry.
You should be.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Because this is your idea.
Tap, dance, and crash with some nachos. Holy nuts.
Yep. You done did it, son.
Yeah, I did it good.
But before we got into what he done did, real quick, join us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher, at Creepin' It Real. If you haven't yet, hit that subscribe button. We'll drop in your favorite podcatcher every Tuesday, plus the occasional bonus episode, or back-to-back bonus episodes if Lunchbox forgets to put the release date out.
It might happen.
It's a thing. If you have any movie suggestions, or if you want to just, you know, give us a holler, you can email us at creepitreal.cm@gmail.com. And just a reminder, now that Halloween is over, and we hope everyone had a safe and spooky one, you can get ready for Christmas by buying our merch at creepitreal.redbubble.com or click the link in the Instagram bio to get some sweet-ass, one-of-a-kind merchandise.
Yeah!
Now, on with the show. Okay, so, I hate you.
It's gonna get worse. We start off with an easy one.
It's true.
Yeah, but... this is my brainchild for the month of November.
And I wanted to do cannibals, for the record. I had on the schedule cannibals. And he said, no, let's do really, really, really ridiculously bad movies. And I asked him why. And he said, because there's some I don't ever want to have to do and I want to rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah, and that's pretty much where this is all going. It's just, this is... these are not the movies that are just so awesomely bad that it's like that you somehow tend to like them, much like your Thanksgiving or for me Leprechaun. It's one of those like
They're not those glorious train wrecks that we all know and love. These are the ones that make us want to go play in traffic or jump off a building or wonder why our parents let us be born.
And honestly, I think every movie that we have on here, I have never heard anyone say, like, a good thing. Like, oh my god, like, that's my favorite movie out of all people I know are crazy in this day and age.
These are the ones you love shit on.
Yeah. If you've come across someone like this,
get them serious mental health.
Run away fast.
They need a doctor.
that boy and rat. But that's the thing is...
you need Jesus.
Man, you need something. But these are all the movies that are just... They fall in the category of just why? Why even bother type of thing? It's just... I can see what you were maybe trying to go for, but...
But why?
Yeah, so... these are the dumpster fires, and,
kicking it off.
Oh, yeah.
Kicking it off, we did Freddy's Dead, Daddy Issues.
We started this podcast off with Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Number one. Now, a couple years later, sad to say, we fall into the...
we hit the other side of that shit sandwich.
The really, just of Freddy. It's the bleh years. And this is a very, very weird one.
This is the why God years.
And as you mentioned it, yes, it's the daddy issues. Mm-hmm. You know, like you had like Nightmare on Elm Street 2, which was the, you know, labeled as the gay.
Right.
Or the gayest horror movie.
It's the questioning
issues. Yeah. And this one, it's like, oh, well, no, this is clearly daddy issues.
And then we had, there's Dream Warriors, which was sort of the Christian nightmare. There was part 4, which was like the MTV nightmare. And then part 5, which was the nightmare that jumped the shark. And then this is part 6, which is, did we have to do this again? Freddy's Dead was released on September 13th, 1991, was made for a budget of about $11 million. This one had the biggest budget.
I can tell you why.
Let me say that again. For some reason, this one had the biggest budget.
Oh, pick me, I have the answer.
Why?
Because they had some sweet-ass glasses.
Yeah.
And they put them on, and then they disappeared.
Yeah, we'll get into that. It ended up grossing $34.8 million. The movie was written and directed by Rachel Talalay. It was co-written by Michael DeLuca. Why, though? Who cares? It starred Robert Englund as Freddie, Lisa Zane as Maggie, Sean Greenblatt as John, Leslie Dean as Tracy, Ricky Dean Logan as Carlos, Breckin Meyer of Robot Chicken fame as Spencer, Yaphet Kotto as Doc, and then a couple of cameos by Tom and Roseanne Arnold, and a very small cameo. Somehow, some way, Rachel Talalay managed to bribe Johnny Depp to do a riff on the 80s drug commercials, the This Is Your Brain on Drugs thing.
And wasn't to come and back for that. Bob Shea was also in the movie, too.
I mean, Bob Shea was in all of them. That's that's kind of a gimme. So, yeah. This was a movie.
It sure the hell was. I don't even know where to start with this one.
But well, part of the reason why it was the way that it was is because Rachel Talalay is from the John Waters School of Movie Making.
Didn't she do a Doctor Who episode?
She actually did. Okay. Let's flash forward to 2017 when she did a two-part season finale for Doctor Who, which was the Peter Capaldi years. And yes. It was amazing. She did two seasons in a row of Peter Capaldi's, did the season finales, or the series finale, because that's how they describe them as a series. Whatever. But she did the finales, and those episodes of Who were amazing.
Yeah, I remember, like, us sitting down, and you saw the director's name popped up, and you're like, really? Oh, no. And then we watched, it was like, oh, yeah, the amazing, that's awesome. Like, we were so happy that it was actually really, really good.
It was excellent. So, I mean, clearly in the nearly 30 years between her doing this and her doing, the 26 years between her doing Freddy and her doing Doctor Who, was a huge deal. She managed to, you know, pull something together. So good for you, Rachel.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. However, you are not forgiven for this abomination against God. But she had been a part of New Line Studios since the beginning. She'd been a part of Nightmare on Elm Street since the very, very beginning, from production assisting all the way up to now, you know, directing. She had some producer credits, et cetera, et cetera. So she'd been part of New Line the whole time.
And wasn't this like one of the first like real like female director, like horror movie roles? I might be speaking out of my ass or anything like that, but it's like there may be
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, for Nightmare on Elm Street, but I'm talking like in general. Like, I can't think of any other like
for a slasher franchise. She's one of the notable ones. I'd have to go digging to see if the answer to that is correct or not.
Yeah, if you guys know that answer, please, like, I would love to learn and you know, dive a little bit deeper on that. But it's like she's the only one that I've known that's just like a female director in the horror or the slasher genre.
I mean, there are a lot. You have to go digging. And there were a bunch in the 80s, too. There was one notable one. Her name is escaping me. And I remember seeing her on one of the In Search of Darkness docs.
Mm.
She was an Asian woman, but her name is escaping me. She did some pretty schlocky 80s slasher
stuff.
But no, there's a few. But she's, at this point in 1991, Talalay was in the minority. And oh my god, on the movie poster it says they saved the best for last.
It literally says that on the poster. Oh, that's about like Prometheus, like all questions will be answered. Bullshit, I have more than you gave me.
Not only did you not answer any of the questions that I had, I now have several more on top of that pile, which I didn't have prior to this movie.
Like, literally, me and our friends are sitting at Chipotle after Prometheus having an argument over all the questions that we...
So many questions.
It's just like, that poster was bullshit.
Right?
And I always love when they do, like, or when, like, when the production companies, when they make these posters. I mean, I'm a graphic artist, and so I've done that where you have to sit there and think up slogans or one-liners for just different types of things. And
but really? Save the best for last? Are you sure? Yeah. New line!
Like, do you remember that scene from Fanboys when the guys get into the movie theater and Phantom Menace and they're like, hey guys, what if it sucks? That's pretty much just like what I feel like every movie company should go. It's like, you know what? If this movie really bombs, I don't want to sit there and say, hey, we saved the best for last because you really didn't.
That's,
luckily, we that's did get the best for last. I will say that for the Freddy series. New Nightmare was, I mean, I would definitely say Dream Warriors is probably my all-time favorite.
No, but if you want to cap out that original run, New Nightmare was honestly the best out of all seven of those movies.
It was probably the scariest. It had just more anxiety inducing like scenes, and that was really cool. And yeah, it played around.
It was also dark and ahead of its time.
Yes.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about this shit show.
But I wanna.
I know, I would so much rather. But this was your idea.
I know.
I hate you.
I'll soldier through it.
I hate you. Hate you.
All right. So where do you want to start now? Now back to the poster. Like looking at it, it's a cool ass design. That is a really neat Freddy poster. It's just that slogan sucks
because it's a lie.
Dog shit.
Because they're lying to you. All right, let's start off with the positives because I found a couple. I did. I swear, I found a couple.
I about spit out my water.
I'm sorry, but I found some. Upon this rewatch, I did. Leslie Dean, Tracy, were the positive. She was great in this movie. She had to go to some really dark places. They touched on parental molestation, sexual violation, and those sorts of things with her. And I think she did. I really think that she did a great job. She was earnest. She was very into the role. She took it seriously. She really brought a lot of intensity to it because Tracy was a very intense, broken character. She, like you could tell that she read the script and was like, all right, I'm going to make the best of a bad situation. The whole movie itself was really stupid, but Leslie Dean and honestly a couple of other members of the cast, like, what's his name that played Carlos? Ricky Dean Logan. He was also really good. I really liked Carlos in this movie.
The thing that I found,
especially together, the pair of them together was
really good. And I found the positive as well. The one thing that I thought they did a very, very good job on were, and this is so terrible, were those terrible parent rapey scenes, like, or just that really intense domestic abuse and just the parental abuse and things like that.
Ironically, the worst things that could possibly happen to a human were the best parts of this movie.
And the reason that I say that it is the best is because it was the one part of the movie that made you feel uneasy. And it was an easy one for them to sit there and go, okay, well, this is scary because it is very real. And I think that's what they what she was really trying to go after was, I mean, Freddy is scary because he's in your dreams and he can manipulate, but he does try to pull out some type of reality out of you. And the thing with, like, Carlos and his mom and the big-ass Q-tip, it's like, that's absolutely terrifying because that's, like, old school, just mom just sitting there just, or it's kind of like the mouthwash type thing. It's just
or
the soap, stuff like that. But stuff with Tracy and her dad in the dank ass apartment where he's got his wife beater on, terrible mustache, and it's just
I think that was what I think this movie actually did well was all of the characters in this movie were victims of domestic abuse in some way or another, parental abuse specifically. You had Leslie who was violated by her dad, and you had Maggie who was Freddy Krueger's daughter and watched her mother get murdered, and you had Carlos who was abused by his mother, and the reason why he's deaf was because he wasn't listening to her, so she shoved a Q-tip in his ear and busted up his eardrum. And then you had Breckin Meyer's character Spencer, who was the stoner, to use your cliche stoner, but he was having issues because his father was trying to steer him down a path and control his life that he didn't necessarily want to do. Like, he was the stoner high school kid, but I think if his dad wasn't pushing him so hard, he would not have been that kid.
Yeah.
But the big black shit stain on that was John Doe.
Yeah.
Fucking why?
There's so much that it just, it doesn't make sense, and it falls apart right one at the point where he just shows up.
He was the last child of Springwood. He was the last teenager.
Doesn't make sense.
Whatever. and Freddie needed to use him as a vehicle to get out of, to bring his daughter back and get him out of Springwood. Sure. Cool. So he was being used, and he was going through these dream loops. And honestly, Sean Greenblatt, his acting was not good.
No, there was a couple parts that I could see that there, like that, where he shined.
I'm your memories.
Yeah, like there's so many of them.
It's not a boy.
The one scene that I did enjoy with him is the thing where he wakes up. He's like, God. He's like, not again. He's like, you know what? I'm not getting off this bed. There's nothing that's getting me off this bed. And then it catches fire, and he's like, God damn it. And he just, like, gets off the bed, and the whole house is on fire, and he jumps out the window, and then, like, he falls to his death. But it's just, like, just the, nothing's getting off. Fuck it. Like, he jumps out. Yeah, but that was the thing, was the premise that they try to bring up where he's the last teenager of Springwood.
He's the last child.
Or last child of Springwood.
Yeah, the last minor.
It's... How? How is that possible?
Because Freddie Dunn killed them all.
But that's the thing, is like...
Remember that carnival scene?
No, I understand the carnival scene, but it's just the whole thing of... He's the last one, so wouldn't all of the adults try to protect him in some way by either getting him away from Springwood? Like,
don't inject logic in this. What are you, crazy?
Like, it, and on top of that, it's like, he's the last one. So, at what point, because he looked like he was what?
He was probably 16 or 17.
16, 17. So, would that mean that once he hits 18, or like, when do you stop being a kid? Because in this film, Freddie infiltrates adult dreams. Yes. And it's never really said whose dreams he can actually take over. Which is something that I was like, okay, I kind of like that. Because why is it, and like, when does the age range stop for Freddie? It's like, does he, or it's, he obviously kind of has like that Pennywise type of thing where, yeah, I can fuck with adults, but I like kids better. Like,
I think that's really what it is, because yeah, he was a child murderer. He could probably go after adults, but his preference skews towards minors.
Yeah. And I mean, and like...
Since, oh, yeah, I screwed myself.
Yeah, yeah. No, we got it. We understand. Yep. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, is it was very odd for them to sit there, and this whole entire town has been so devoid of children that it's turned everyone into a mental case.
Mm-hmm. Which usually the opposite is true. Usually kids are the ones that drive you crazy.
Oh yeah.
Not the lack of children.
Oh yeah.
The abundance of children.
And what about those people that have never had kids? Did they go crazy? Like what? Like, it's like, if a town is making you that insane,
why wouldn't you move? If you saw the kids were dropping dead everywhere, like, wouldn't you take your kids and be like, you know, maybe we should find another school district and another not here?
Now, I could see if maybe it was all within this, like, Freddy dream world, but it just, that whole scene just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't add up for anything, because once they get into Springwood, it's that barrier pops up. So is that just some fucking weird dream barrier that Freddy has? But if that's the case, they're all awake at during the day, and
maybe it's like Storybrooke and Once Upon a Time.
Oh.
It's like a magic barrier of some kind.
Like, there was just some evil barrier that has always been around Springwood, and but again, it's like, why wouldn't it? I mean,
it's the barrier. It's the barrier to keep Freddy in. But who put it there?
Oh, then maybe if that was the case, then maybe the rest of the adults couldn't leave to get out. But then, like, Freddy was just murdering them one by one. Maybe that's only explanation why that thing that could even make sense is that premise of just this, just an evil barrier that no one can leave. Once you cross that line, no one can go.
But who put that there?
The weird spermy ghost demon things.
The dream sperm?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The demon splooge.
I feel bad.
Skeet skeet.
I feel shame.
Oh, damn.
I gotta go.
But that's the thing is like, okay, so if there was a barrier and that no one could cross, so all these adults are now in the town and freaking out, losing their minds, and I'm assuming that they don't know how to function or cook or whatever because there's like rotten food and everything else, and they just live their life by this carnival, which also, that does not look anything like Springwood at all. It almost looks like a back, like rural area of like Camp Crystal Lake. It looked like there was being a campsite like just down the road, and Crazy Ralph is riding his bike going, y'all doomed. That would have made this movie better. Crazy Ralph would have made this movie better, hands down.
On his bicycle.
Y'all doomed. And they're like, wow, man, this town's crazy. And then Roseanne shows up, and she's like, yeah, I love kids, yeah.
I'm gonna pinch your cheeks.
Yeah, I love them.
Oh, boy.
All right. I will say this. I like Tom Arnold a lot, actually. I like his work when I was a kid always made me laugh. Roseanne, loved Roseanne as a kid. Like the show Roseanne, mm-hmm. You know, all that is great. I remember seeing, this is actually one of the first movies, like horror movies, as a very young kid that I remember seeing because of the very Looney Tune-esque thing. Like, this is a horror movie that you could technically show to a kid.
Because it's that silly.
It is.
It's cartoon violence.
There is language and there is scenarios, but I mean...
Oh, but come on. Like, even yeah. If I remember... seeing this when I was younger, specifically because of the scene with the power glove in Breckenmeyer.
Yep. And, yeah, we'll get to that, too. But the thing is like, wait. All the stuff with, when I saw, like, Tom and Roseanne, I was just like, I kind of get excited. I was like, that's fine. Was it a great cameo? No. Tom was, I don't know where that accent came from. Asshole! Don't what? Really talk like that, dude. But unless, like, and that's where it's like, so are you a hick in Springwood? Like, is that because where, like, Springwood's in what, Ohio? Like,
it's supposed to be in Ohio. It's probably in the Ohio Valley, which is like the weird junction with Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky, kind of okay. All button up against each other.
I don't know. It just like that just seemed very off. But I didn't mind that cameo too much. I also love the Johnny Depp cameo as little as it was.
There's one more. But we have one more cameo.
What was the other cameo?
Alice Cooper as Freddy's yes! dad. Yes! Freddy's stepdad.
And that one, you just gotta love. You just gotta love the Coops.
Like, sure.
Now, the thing was, like, I love that he was in this, and...
Well, he's been the villain forever.
So. Yeah, and it's just hilarious when he just comes down the stairs. It's like, I just have his music in my head. Like, it's just the, Freddy, come get your medicine. It's like, okay, like, all right, I'm waiting for this big ass prop. You're going to cut your own head off. Let's do this. Let's go. Like, I absolutely love Alice Cooper.
If you've ever read The Shining novel, this kind of reminds me a little bit of some of Jack Torrance's flashbacks in the novel.
Yes.
Where he was thinking back to what his father used to do to him. Because his father was a drunk. And when he would abuse his mother, and he would abuse Jack. And it was, you know, come here, you pup. Come take your medicine.
Yeah. And I didn't... Like, again, that was another one of those scenes of just, you know, that domestic abuse and
yep.
That really had an impact.
Nightmare on Elm Street. daddy issues.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we didn't get Cinnamon.
So, but that was the thing, was they, in that scene, the teenager playing the younger, or playing that young Freddy that's cutting himself with the razor blade stuff, he was awesome. Like, he, like, seemed, like, pretty cool as a potential Freddy.
It's that's,
like,
what makes me so cranky with this movie is, generally speaking, this cast was great. And the acting overall really was kind of decent. Like, there was a few cringy moments, but, like, it really, the acting was, I mean, Robert Englund aside, because he was chewing all the fucking scenery, but, like, the actual core cast of our kids and Maggie, like, the acting was actually pretty good. It's a shame they had dog shit to work with.
Yeah, it's just the story itself was just, and the production, it, you could definitely tell, like, there was a budget, but it's just that, like, they didn't know what they were gonna do with it. It just, it's, ugh. Yeah, it was just really hard. But, like, that guy that was playing the younger Fred Krueger, it's like he was super sinister. Granted, he doesn't act anything like Robert Englund, and that, like, there was no mannerisms or anything. It was just, he was his own Freddy, and that is what I feel Freddy needs to go towards. If they are going to do some type of remake,
or do another, add in another entry into the series,
another, it needs to be straight up no comedy. Like, I want sinister Freddy. Like, I mean, if you're gonna do, like, the comedy, it doesn't need to be the one-liner, quippy, like, even the stuff with Jackie in the remake, the one-liners that he gave off, they seem sinister. I just think the delivery of some of them, and maybe, like, with on attached with his look, didn't sell perfectly as it should.
Yeah, there, like, were some hiccups.
Like, there, what was the one where that was, like, really, like, creepy and cringy, where it's the like, oh, this is my favorite dress. It's, like, time to play. Or it's, like...
Nancy said, he's like, well, what do you want to play? And Nancy goes, fuck you. And he's like, ooh, sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh.
Yeah, like, stuff like that. It's, like, the delivery, it's, like, okay, it's funny, and it's, you know, it can get, like, a little, like, good one type of moment, but it didn't sell.
This was quippy Freddy turned up to 11. Everything was a joke. Everything was a crack. Everything was, like, tongue firmly planted in cheek. It wasn't, and Freddy was lazy. This is lazy Freddy. This is lazy Freddy getting his ass kicked up and down, all over the place.
And I mean, this is nothing new. Freddy has always gotten his ass kicked.
No, but this was exceptionally bad.
Yeah, this was him, literally the scene that I would put up for, as the example for everything Freddy did in this movie, was that scene with Spencer when Freddy's playing video games. It's fucking lazy. Like, it's just him with his feet up. It's just like,
with the power glove.
Like, all of that. It's just like, it's just very, very lax.
But it was, and the worst part is that's the worst performance of Freddy Krueger. I would point to that specific scene, because it was just like, boing, 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 now we're playing with power, and, like, great graphics, and all these stupid one-liners that they weren't connected by anything.
It, for me, and I'm, again, it's like, this is just coming from, this is just my opinion. I mean, I've heard other people that absolutely love the crazy, zany Freddy Krueger, but for me, it's like, I want my slashers to
I
want them scary. I don't want to sit there and it's like, yeah, like that scene with, you know, like, oh, great graphics. It's like, okay, I get the premise of what they're doing, but
it was too much.
It takes you complete, and it makes you on the side of Freddy.
Well, that was actually probably the biggest mistake of this movie, is they tried to humanize him.
Yes.
That is a fatal flaw. This guy is supposed to be a villain. Freddy likes being a villain. He likes to murder kids. And it's always been hinted at that he enjoyed molesting them too. So the fact that we're trying to humanize him with a daughter, we're having these flashbacks to him as a child and how he was bullied and by the kids in his class and by the teachers and by his stepdad and like the stuff he went through with his wife. Like, why are we humanizing him? And then the fact where he's, you know, basically like the worst thing that ever happened to me was having my daughter taken away.
Which, holy shit, you just threw fucking wrench into everything.
Yeah, like, that humanizes Freddy to the point where you're making him sympathetic? Fucking why? He's a pedophile and a child murderer. Why are we humanizing this man? No. Bad. Yeah. Bad New Line. Smacky
and,
you.
And I try to, like, think back to when you have something like, I don't know, like Michael Myers. Right? So Michael Myers in John Carpenter's Halloween, you have no fucking idea about him.
Yeah, he's just a blank slate.
Until number two, when they add in that, oh, Laurie's his sister and he's after her.
Right.
Okay, well now we have some type of premise. Flash forward to Rob Zombie, when he gives you a lot more of the apple pie, and it's just...
Well, he teaches you how the apple pie is made.
Yeah, he goes deep. And that's where it's...
Giggity. American Pie. Sorry.
Wow.
I'm a teenage boy. Go on.
And so... But that's the thing is, like, he goes in and he shows you everything about why Michael is the way he is and all this stuff. With this, we don't know really much of anything up until, I believe it is with number... Number three.
Is when they introduce Amanda Kruger's in Dream Warriors.
Well, they introduce Amanda Kruger.
And they give you the Son of 100 Maniacs backstory.
Okay, yeah. But then they don't show until four, right? Or it's four or five. Like the, yeah, where the asylum, and that's like one of the first times we see Robert Englund out of makeup.
The first time we see him out of makeup is in part two, I think, when he's a bus driver.
Well, the bus driver. No, I'm talking like in that shot with like all the maniacs and stuff like that. So, that whole thing. So it's like from towards the end of three up until five is when they really try to play into that maniac scenario. But that's it. And then once you get to this film, now it's like, oh, he also had a family and a life, and it was. Like, on top of that, like, I can understand, I mean, if you look back at any of the, you know, a lot of, like, the serial killers, like John Wayne Gacy, I mean, he had a family, he had a life, he was very well liked.
Jeffrey Dahmer was raised in an upper middle class family. Yeah. He had everything.
And so that premise of him having the wife, daughter, and everything else, and still being the Springwood slasher is not too shabby for me. Like, like that. That's cool.
It's not far-fetched at all, but I think given... If we didn't have those other five films prior to that where we are establishing that he's basically a born villain, and then they try to humanize him in the movie where they're like, no, we're gonna quote-unquote kill him off for good, that's when you're like,
It's too little too late.
Right.
And you're given, like, major information.
And not only that, they're introducing brand new stuff into the canon at the bottom of the ninth. Bad storytelling. You don't fucking do that. You tie up all your loose ends to end your story. You don't introduce this idea of he's been possessed by these dream demons that allowed him to be immortal right at the end of the entire, what's supposed to be the end of the series. Not just the end of the movie, but the end of the series.
Once you get into that, and then on top of that, where it's his reasoning for everything is because they took his daughter away from him. And he, like, after that is when the townspeople killed him, and then he came back. But it was because they took his daughter.
But it was also the fact that, like, it's implied that she told on him. She's the one who blew the whistle and got him killed.
Yeah, and so that whole premise is like, oh, okay, so you're just going to go after the kids of Springwood because the parents killed you, but then, oh, but by the way, like, you guys took my daughter away from me. Like, so now you're just like, I can see where that's going, but it's just like...
But up until that point, up until part five, all we have is, I mean, before part six. Like, all we have is that Freddy just enjoyed hurting children. Like, that was just, that got his rocks off. Like, that was how he got his jollies, was hurting kids. Now there's this reason introduced where it's like, oh, not only did he enjoy hurting kids, because one of the cruxes of what started the ball rolling on Freddy's demise was his wife found his playroom in the basement of their house. And you hear her scream, and she comes up and confronts him about it. And it's like, oh, well, I promise I'm not going to tell. And, you know, that's what gets her killed. But, like, he's been doing it this whole time, so he's leading the double life, where if something like that were introduced towards, within the first couple of films, and you kind of did that John Wayne Gacy angle, then you probably could have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
This was bad timing.
Yeah, and that's where it's like, when you go into, and I put up, I don't think we're going to do this movie for this month. We might have to revisit this one a little bit later.
Nope.
But
wait, I'm sorry.
Jason Goes to Hell. Our my buddy Brock, like, that he actually says that it's one of his favorite Friday movies, and I don't understand why, because they throw in this weird ass lore at the end and it doesn't make sense. And it's one of the, like, movies where you don't technically get a Jason Voorhees. You're getting this weird slug soul thing that technically is Jason. And then, like, it's just, it's fucking weird. And then Jason's after a relative, like, it's his niece.
It's
or
his sister.
It's just, like, his sister. Like, fucking why? Like, it makes no sense. And the stuff with this film is adding the daughter in, and having all of the kids in Springwood go, it's just every, and then having the last one needing to go out, and then as he leaves, he has amnesia.
Helpful.
Awesome. And then when he gets to town, he happens to come across the exact person that Freddy needs. Freddy didn't say, hey, go to this place. He has no clue.
No, it's all coincidental.
Where, yeah. This woman, his daughter, could have been taken anywhere. Anywhere. And she ended up in the next town over.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, granted, going back to, like, the Rob Zombie Halloween, where it's like, oh, they took
Lori
out, and then it's like, oh, they brought her back. I'm like, fucking hell.
Yeah, no, they tried to get Lori out, and then Haddonfield family adopted her. The Strodes adopted her, and then it was like, oops.
But yeah, it's
we
like,
tried.
But Kruger's daughter could have gone, they could have taken her anywhere.
And it was a closed adoption. There was no history on Maggie. Her adoption paper said Jane Doe. When you look at the adoption certificate,
mm-hmm.
She doesn't have a name. I think her name's Catherine.
It's Catherine.
Yeah, it's not Catherine Kruger. It's Jane Doe. Because when they take this little girl to protect her, they make her anonymous. And then when she's adopted by the family, next town over from Springwood, her name is Maggie Burroughs. So, no one's supposed to know.
Yeah.
But, like, okay, so here, I give this movie credit for trying to do something different. But it's too little too late.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part that I think is the hardest pill to swallow, is they'd already milked the cow dry, and now this is the point where, like, the cow is keeling over and there's literally nothing left. Like, I appreciate when a series tries to do something different. We just did Child's Play, and you can point to those first three movies, Child's Play 1, 2, and 3, as basically being, like, the two sequels, part two, part three, is basically being retreads of part one. And it wasn't until that second block with Bride and Seed of Chucky where we get things starting to go different. And then you have block three and block four, which is the series. But, like, Child's Play, Don Mancini has been trying, like, he's taken the time to sort of shift things around and do a few different things. And it's not always just the Andy Barclay stuff. Like, but this one, and you can point to Friday the 13th, especially those first four movies, as doing exactly that, where it's just rehashing, retreading, rinse, repeat. And while Freddy's Dead does indeed try to do something a little bit different with it, it went so far off the fucking rails that it was tonally, it didn't fit in, even after Dream Child, which was kooky. Tonally, it didn't fit with the rest of the series. Dialogue didn't fit with the rest of the series. The character development didn't fit with the rest of the series. It's really this weird little island in and of itself that doesn't fit. It's like the weird crooked puzzle piece that just you can't put it in anywhere else. But yeah, because Freddy Krueger's in it, it's a nightmare movie.
Exactly. And that's where it's... And I like that you brought up the Chucky with Child's Play and Don, where it's he's continuously tried to do something, you know, new each time, so you're not getting the same damn movie. However, the character development or just either alterations between the characters, it fits for the lore. And you can literally watch going from one to, you know, the new series, and somehow it fits. Like, the puzzle piece fits. For this one, or even going from, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, you have Nightmare on Elm Street 1 that was doing something completely new. And Wes Craven was going... like that was all Wes Craven was going to do. That's all he needed to do. Like, just leave it off at the end, and then it's like, oh, he's still out there. Cool. And then, you know, production company sees dollar signs, and they're let's keep going.
Pick it up and run with it.
And then once you get to, like, number 2, you could see where the lore alters. And now Freddy can possess, and it's not...
And come out into the real world.
So, and that was something where a lot of people, I felt, had a big problem with, but it's like, there's no real lore of Freddy that's necessarily been established until you get to number 3. 3 is the pinnacle of Freddy. Of everything Freddy does, where it makes sense because he's still got the one-liners, and the one-liners are not
dark,
are not creepy, or not, oh, they're creepy, but like they're not goofy, or they're not like Looney Tune-esque. And that was something else too with Freddy's Dead, is it's Freddy's Dead, Daddy Issues,
Looney Tunes
presented by Looney Tunes. Like
there's, he rolls out that bed of spikes and he just, it's a Bugs Bunny gag.
Yeah.
Wile E. Coyote would do something like that. What are we doing?
Exactly. And the thing was, like, so once we get into 3 and it's the pinnacle, like, I mean, so like the whole, like, you know, welcome to prime time, bitch, like that iconic lines. And just, and even the stuff like where he's controlling him. Okay, so if we look at Spencer and the video game thing, I understand that it's like they're trying to play into that weird video game-esque, like, you know, the controlling look of it.
The Nintendo Power Glove had come out within the last like year or so of that.
I owned one,
and they none of them worked. they were terrible. But like, this is when Nintendo was kind of on its way up, and we were getting some of those, like, the video games were getting really, really big, and it's the late 80s, early 90s, and arcades are humongous. Like, they're all over the place. So they're playing with pop culture is what they're doing. Yeah.
But the Spencer scene where he's being controlled and he's walking around the house, just punching holes in it, and he's jumping up, and they're literally just controlling him. He has no control over his body, whatever it is. Go back to Dream Warriors, that scene where the marionette, like, and Freddy's doing 10 times better than what the thing with Spencer was. Like, that, it's just, it gave you the visualization, I mean, with all the veins coming out of his, you know, the feet and wrists, and then him, and then throwing him off the edge. And then when you get to Spencer, it's like, okay, yeah, is a virtual terrible cartoon dad is beating on him, saying, be like me, be like me, be like me. And then all of a sudden, they're like, Freddy's got a towel. Like, it's a cartoon Freddy. He's got a towel. And then he smacks Spencer off a ledge. And that kills him? Like, or like, and he falls into, like, a pit of his dad's.
In the game, but in the real world, what Maggie sees is he basically falls down a hole in the stairs to a pit of into hell.
And how does she see it? She's not asleep. Like, that's the thing.
Because Spencer's body is doing things, but she shouldn't be able to see this hole to nowhere.
Exactly. And that's where this whole thing of, like, Okay, so can when they go into Springwood, is it like Freddy is now controlling everything that's in it, whether you're asleep or awake? Or how is that working? Because yeah, where the fuck did that hole come from? And where, and then after Spencer went in, where'd the hole go? She was like, oh cool, and like she went and she just left. And then on top of that, like there's other scenes where after Freddy kills one of the kids, he takes their souls and they disappear. I call bullshit because how many times has he killed someone in their sleep and they are, boom, still there? And like the stuff, like Carlos's death is one of the coolest deaths in this movie. It's the most iconic and it's very terrifying. It's simple but effective.
And his head explodes.
Where the fuck is he? Where the hell did Carlos go?
He didn't you pay attention? Freddy absorbed him.
No, but that's the thing is, I would to see something.
Well, that doesn't gruesome. You know what? That's right, because he in the dream, Carlos's head explodes, and Freddy absorbs him. But when we're looking at like John Doe, John Doe's body is still there. They have to leave him on the side of the road.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, he finally dies on the road, but he's there with them. And then Carlos, he's gone. And then Spencer, same thing. He falls through the fucking hole. He gone. And then when you actually come across, well, you got the John Doe thing. You see all the punctured, you know, blood pools. And then he gives the last, you know, little information. Yeah. And then he dies. And then you see him go into some light beam thing. But then, Freddy, you see Freddy there, and he absorbs them. So, does that mean that... It's just... It feels weird when you see Freddy like that.
He's using them to charge his battery, and that so he can take over Catherine, Maggie, so he can get out of...
Yeah.
Why? My brain!
And I feel like they took that kind of premise to Freddy versus Jason. I feel like that was one of the things where he was like, oh, I'm not strong enough. I need them to fear me. I need to, you know, like all that stuff. And then, but this is kind of where I feel like he's getting to that point where it's like, I need to do things and I need to be stronger. And
they've been doing the whole, like, he absorbs the souls thing. I remember that very specifically in part 4 was one of the things that they...
Yeah, I mean, I remember the weird, like, the awesome, like, chest scene where you see all the...
And Linnea Quigley's boobs.
Oh my God, it's amazing. And, but that's the thing is, it's not that it's uncommon for him to do that. It's the manner as to, and reasoning as to why he's doing it. And I can understand where, and this is where I give Freddy vs. Jason more credit than anything, because they took that premise and they kind of went with it, where it's like, yeah, he's, you know, kids are they don't remember him, they don't fear him, so he needs to get back, and that he needs that fear. And so obviously, okay, Jason's there, so he's going to work his magic somehow to manipulate and get that going. Fine. Fine if that's where you want to go with it. I still feel like Freddy was a bitch in that movie because Jason did all the killing and Freddy did nothing. But in this one, it's just kind of like, for him, again, the premise of John Doe, of him letting the kid leave Springwood, and then the kid just running around the streets and then getting picked up by the cops. Oh, the goddamn cops! Do you remember what they fucking said? Those fucking inner city cops, and they sat there and they saw John Doe down the street and they're like, hey, oh, we got another junkie. It's like, hey, you seen that one before? No, I've never seen him. Oh, he looks young. Oh, I guess it's just another one for the juvie hall. You know what? No, screw that. I'm not doing paperwork. Let's just take him down to the...
Yeah,
took
him down to the youth shelter.
Yeah, the youth shelter. Let's let them fill out all the paperwork. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, it's so terrible.
Yeah, that was stupid.
And then having John Doe meet up with the exact person that is required for Fred Krueger's plan to get out of goddamn Springwood. Mm-hmm. And if there's nothing else, there's no other driving force other than sure dumb luck.
Right.
And then on top of that, John Doe has the article that that Maggie needs in order to start sparking some type of shit from her brain.
And did Freddy give him that?
Nobody knows. It came from the school. Because when they went to the school and the teacher's losing his mind talking about when Freddy arrived.
Oh, like, yeah. The Freddy 101 thing, which we literally did not need.
And like, if you look, like, there's so much shit on that chalkboard that makes no goddamn sense.
In 1493, Freddy sailed across the sea.
Like, they also blame Hiroshima on him. If you saw, like, there's, look at the timeline, and, like, on the bottom is, like, Hiroshima is one of the things. And then it goes, it's like, Hiroshima, and then 1966, they took his kid away. And it's like, whoa, back up? Like, what is that? Like, Hiroshima? Like, what? Huh?
He was the Enola Gay that dropped the bomb.
Like, come on.
Wait. We delivered the bomb.
Because Jaws.
Yeah.
Yes, quit! But that was the thing. Is like, that whole scene was ridiculous. And then on top of that, when she's looking through this, it almost looks like a weird, like, serial killer, like, memorial book, where it's just all these missing child pictures and just news articles of just people being murdered. And I was like, okay, well, that's it's kind of creepy for someone to have collected. But then again, it's like, was that Freddy, or is that actually the town, or like, why is this there? And again, Maggie finds the exact thing that she needs. And then when she finds the little section where she, like, she takes the article out and she's like, oh, look, you were here. It's like, why was he there? It's like, so that crazy ass teacher was teaching him because that book was in that classroom, and so he must have got it from, like, there. I have all the questions, all of them. It's 100% of the questions.
My head hurts.
It's just like trying.
Like, really, I'm starting to get that weird pain, like, right between my eyes.
The fact that you, like, And this just might be us just, like, really dissecting this thing for the podcast. But at the same time, when things like that pop up and you're watching it and you're going, wait, why is that? Why is this? What is this? What the fuck happened to that bitch's head? Like, what is going on?
Well, you know what? If you ask one question, you can kind of overlook it. But when one question leads to another and another and another and another ad nauseum, it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I, another positive that I did have for this film,
mm-hmm.
A positive and a negative. The positive was Yaphet Kotto, like, as Doc. He's awesome. He is amazing.
Especially when he goes full Big Red Machine and rips the door off the hinges.
Holy shit, yeah. Out of fucking nowhere, like, just... and like, he's sitting there, like, trying, and all of a sudden, just, like...
He gets that bear strength.
It turns the paper, just like, Mama Bear, just flipping, going nuts. But no, he's great, but the problem that I felt that they fucked him up. Like, they didn't use him right at all. And for me, when I saw him, I honestly cannot stop thinking about Alien. Because he's probably one of the best crew members and the Ripley's
Alien.
Nostromo, yeah, the Nostromo. Like, so it's like, he is a fantastic actor. I mean, he's in all types of shit. You know, like Running Man. He did, like, The Wire. He's in a bunch of fucking Law and Order. I mean, his IMDb goes on for
decades.
All yeah. types of shit. But Alien is the thing that really stands out to me, because I'm a big Alien nerd. But for this movie, they fucked him up because he is a doctor who specializes in dreams. Mm-hmm. Holy on the nose, Batman.
Like, Andy, right?
And then when Maggie walks into his room, he's got a poster of all these this ancient demon, dream demon thing. She clearly is buddies with this guy. They're colleagues. They work together.
Yep.
She's never seen that goddamn poster in her life. She's not walked into that room and go, "Hey, what's that?" She's never spoken to him about that damn poster. And then when he talks about the poster, it is exactly,
it's the door to Freddy's consciousness.
It is exactly what you need to describe Freddy.
Yeah.
Like, it is so on the nose that it's like, well, we don't really need a movie now because we know exactly where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, well, those fuckers are the cause of all this shit. And now you got to go into the Freddy. And then, but we weren't expecting them to go, oh, hey, we're going to put on the fucking 3D glasses and we're going to tell the audience that the last 10 minutes of the film, put them on, and then they magically disappear. And then we get the best 3D scene of all time. Do you think it's the one from Jaws 3D with the paper mache shark coming at you? Oh, no. No. This one kicks the shit out of that. This is Maggie with the crazy hand. Ooh, look at the hand, everybody. It's just wiggle the fingers. Ooh. That drives me fucking bananas. It's just like, I don't understand. The shit from, like, the latest My Bloody Valentine, where the girl, like, gets in the way of the fucking pickaxe. It's,
yeah, right.
Like, it's like, oh my god. I understand what they're doing, and I understand, like, with 3D, it's like you got to have it like coming straight for it, but it's just like, it's like how uninteresting to sit there and go, oh my god. Like, and also on top of that, it's, I know that she's in this like weird like dream state, but at the same time, nothing's changed for her. She's literally looking at her hand, like okay, for all you listeners right now, reach your hand out
and wiggle your fingers.
Just arm straight out and just wiggle your fingers and look at your hand. It's the same thing. If you put your 3D glasses on, you're still looking at your fucking hand. Like, that's, you're in 3D. It's
okay. I hate 3D movies. There, I said it. I hate the fact that they were using that as a gimmick at the end just to do it. I hate it.
I will say that I really enjoyed Tron 3D. Like, that was actually really good. Because, like, you know, we saw it in, like, big IMAX. And, again, I'm a Tron nerd, so, like, that was cool. But it's very rare to get a 3D movie and have it be, like, like, most of the scenes not take you out of it. Because it's just, it's always just in your fucking face.
Or give you a goddamn headache.
Yeah. So
it hurts so
bad. And I remember we bought, you had, it was the original DVD collection. And
it had
in
the
that,
glasses with it.
It came with the glasses. And I remember trying to watch it one night where they said, okay, we put on these glasses and then, you know, go for it. And it's like just that red and blue bullshit. I was like, I don't understand how people were able to do that back in the day. Nowadays, when you have the 3D and it's just the solid black, you know, lenses, and it's like, so the technology is a whole lot better. It's just it's just one of those things where it really bugs out the eyes for sure. But it's just that red and blue shit back in the day, that is not a good look at all, like, for a film, especially for something like this where you're watching, now you're having to watch a film in that red and blue tone.
And it was, at the time when the movie was released too, it was confusing because people were putting on their glasses at the beginning of the movie to watch the movie because that's what 3D movies were, and then ushers had to come in and be like, no, you'll get the cue in the third act, blah, 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 to put your glasses on. You put them on when Maggie puts them on, this, that, the other, and it's just, fucking why? And I when I had the DVD version, I watched both versions. I watched it in non, and I watched it in 3D and not in 3D. And honestly, it doesn't make a fucking difference one iota.
It's just, now it's hard for this. I mean, this movie is having a hard time standing up already. It's like a
drunk. What's one more thing?
Yeah. Now it's like, so if you watch this movie not knowing that it's actually a 3D film, especially like in this day and age where kids, I mean, 3D movies aren't really a huge thing. I mean, that was kind of more of the, between like 2008, I think was like one of like the, is like in that, is that era of 3D movies.
Yeah, oh, the return of the 3D movies. Yeah. I want to say it was between like 2008 and 2010.
Somewhere along those, yeah. So now it's like I very rarely ever see anything that's like, oh, like now we're doing this in 3D. But now it's like, so if kids nowadays are going to go watch this movie and come across it, they're going to be like, what the hell are those? Yeah. Like, what is that? And then when you watch it without knowing it's a 3D movie and she's doing all these weird things and then you got these sperm demons like coming at you and it's just like, it's like there's just so much. Oh, what was another one where I think it was like they were holding like a, it was like the knife or like the bat.
It was the bat with the spikes in it.
Yeah, like that, like they would hold it towards the screen, but it's not anything to wow about. Like that's when you get stuff like from Friday the 13th when they do all the you know, the 3D stuff where it's like the eyeball, you know, coming towards the screen and that was some real start of the 3D era. But at the same time, it's like they were doing stuff that was like, oh, here's something shocking coming at your face. Not like, oh, I'm just going to hold this thing kind of towards the screen. And
I don't want to talk about the 3D anymore because it sucks.
But it is a big part of it. And that's even at the end of the movie, it just all falls apart, and especially right at the end, which it just drives me crazy, because after Freddy's blown up, and kids. Really, kids. I mean, I get as a parent, it's like, okay, that got a little chuckle out of me. But that's, quote unquote, the last line of your big slasher.
Yeah.
Kids. That's like, I don't know, Jennifer's Body, ring any bells? Where she gets stabbed in the chest and she gets, oh, my tit! And then, like dies, or it's like, oh, come on. I'm like, if you're going to have your, you know, I mean, if you're gonna have your big bad say something that's gonna be like a one liner or something like that, it's like, come on, like give him something a little cooler than that. Like give him, let him go out with a bang. This again,
he did go out with a bang. He exploded.
That's what I'm saying. Like pun intended. But that's where it's like, you know, when I think back like stuff like Pennywise and It Chapter Two, it's funny because he gets bullied. He gets bullied into...
He gets called names.
He gets bullied into a puddle. And then... But he doesn't have, like... He doesn't have any one-liners or, like... He doesn't certainly, like, look at the camera and go, kids. Like, I mean, even, like, in Chapter 1, after he, like, goes to fall down the well and he does the whole, fear. It's like, okay, like, that's fun, but it's not, like, a goofy...
I thought it was pretty goofy.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that maybe the delivery or whatever was goofy, but...
I just feel like he just should have just fallen down the well without a word, but that's me.
Yeah, so... But still, I mean, that's the thing is, like, if you're going to have, like, a big bad go out and you need to have him say something, it's like... Because then that also, like, I feel it gives me this, like, that urge. Like, so, okay, well, so maybe he'll come back. Like, maybe they weren't done with him or something like that. I mean, and granted, he was later on.
Three years later, we got New Nightmare.
And well, yeah, and with New Nightmare. But, and they did that one right. But and then like with like Freddy vs. Jason at the end when Jason pops out of the water and he's holding Freddy's head and then Freddy does the wink at the end. That's fun. Like for me, that works because it's not. It's very like tongue in cheek, and it's just like, okay, well, hey, maybe it kind of keeps you going on that aspect. But for this, it's just, again, it goes back into that Looney Tunes vibe. And also, like, the music, the score. Did you notice the score on this? Like,
No, actually, I didn't, thankfully.
It is, like, if you really pay attention to the score, there is a lot of upbeat orchestra in this. Like, and they do a lot of, like, there's a lot of, the big scenes with John Doe and were, like, the opening like, the Wicked Witch
thing. Yeah, they did the... Get you pretty and your little soul, too.
Fucking bullshit.
Yeah, they did the Wicked Witch of the West thing, and then they did something else again. It was, like, some weird... I always think of, like, tornadoes when I hear it. But it's just...
Yeah, but they did a lot of that kind of that upbeat Wizard of Oz kind of music where it's the score, it just doesn't fit for that. And there's movies like that where it's like almost feel it's like if you change the score of a movie, it's like
you absolutely can change the tone and the mood of the movie for sure.
Yeah, and that,
just by changing the music,
and that's where it's like there's a lot of that, especially. And I guarantee you that whole Spencer scene where he's running around, they got him going around the house and jumping and punching holes in it. They do the goofy.
It's all video game sounds.
Well, no, it's the cartoon, just the running and the Scooby-Doo bonking. And, yeah, sound. It's all the Scooby-Doo sounds. And it's just like, it kills the mood because it's like, oh, it's supposed to be funny. But it, at the same time.
We're in a horror movie.
It's a horror movie. You're supposed, it's like, I would like to be scared. If you're going to go in that route, it's like I would have had him, like, bust an arm or something like that. Or like, do something, because I think back to some of the older kills, like, I forget her name, but the one where he's feeding her. He's got her in, like, the armchair. Yeah, I got it. And, like, he's just feeding her, and, like, she, like, blows up. That scene's actually kind of comical, but it's also very grotesque. It's like, I want to see something like that, but, like, do with the video game. As shitty as Super Freddy was,
Super Freddy sucks.
Super Freddy does suck.
For those that don't know, that's from James A. Janisse and Dead Meat. But I like the way he says it because Super Freddy sucks.
He says it in he did one for Freddy's Dead. Spencer sucks. Like, yeah. It's great. But, he's great. This movie's not. But that was something where it's not to say that Freddy can't do a comical kill and make it absolutely gnarly, or like what was the one with the Roach Motel?
Yeah, in part four.
Yeah, where she's working out and all of a sudden like she breaks her arm, like her arms like snap off, and then like she's got like the
big, she turns into a bug and they squish.
Fucking amazing, probably one of my favorites. But again, he's got all he's like oh, they check in but they don't check out. It's like that is a typical line for a Roach Motel thing, and then he crushes her. Like, that's great. Like, I like that. It's not too over the top, but it's making it something where it's iconic and you can connect with it. Because, like, that commercial was all over. I mean, I was half expecting at some point for him to go, "Where's the beef?" It's like some shit like that. It's like just pulling out a whole bunch of these fucking commercials.
Random 80s. Yeah. Dollars.
And New Line would probably fucking pull some shit of some promotion, and it's like just a tie-in and what have you. But
you know what also sucked? Freddy's makeup.
Yeah, it wasn't good on this one.
It was like the burns were healing or something. Like, his makeup's... Freddy's makeup sucked. It was bad. And, like, there's been iterations of his makeup that are really terrible. But this one was exceptional. It just did not... My eyeballs didn't like it.
Yeah, it was too soft.
Like,
It didn't... I mean, I he definitely had the burns, but as you said, it looked healed.
Because you could see that shiny scar tissue where it looked like the burns were healing over. And the dentures were terrible too. Like they had the like the bumps. You know, like when little kids, their adult teeth first grow in, they have the bumps on the bottom.
Yep.
And then eventually as you get older, they wear away and they flatten out. So they can bust through the gums. Well, he had those, and then he also had the ridges, like striations in his teeth. And honestly, I didn't like the way any of that looked, and I hate the Freddy voice. That's one of the things that bugs me the most, is where they have to fiddle with his voice and try to make it deeper, and I don't like it. I don't, like, straight up, like, in any of the movies, not just Freddy's Dead, all of them, I hate when they deepen his voice.
I think probably my favorite out of any type of Freddy voice movies, it's got to be Freddy vs. Jason, because like it feels
the feels most more natural.
Exactly, that's the word I was going to use, is natural, but it still kind of gives off of that.
It's gruff, supernatural. Still, yeah,
and like this one, it fluctuates, and where it's either deep or it comes like a little bit lighter.
And then when he's human, it's just Robert Englund's voice, which is fine.
Yeah.
But, like, pick a lane. I hate it. I've always hated it. I don't like when they artificially deepen the voice like that, especially to the degree that they do. Like, if they down-tune it a smidge, fine. But they do it so that he... Basically, it sounds like you've slowed down a record player to, like, 10 RPMs.
Kind of like... Well, I mean, so there's a couple of... shots where the voice sounds a lot very similar to Nightmare One, where it's just a "I am eternal," and it's just very it's like very deep and dramatic, and then you get that, but then you get those like Looney Tunes lines where it's like, "Wow, great graphics." It's still that same cadence, but the tone just isn't there. But then you get the other stuff where he's talking with Maggie, and he's just like, "We're back," and it's just like, but it doesn't have the same depth, and it's, again, it's Robert, but it's just, it's, they definitely play with that tone a lot, and it's like, you gotta just, stick with one tone and keep it.
And the other thing that kind of pulls this out of being a straight-up horror movie, too, is the fact that the blood and gore just isn't there. Like, yeah, there's people being killed, but either the MPAA, like, cut up this movie, or they just decided not to go that route. Like, the Carlos kill with the head exploding was the big one. But that one also made the biggest mess. But all the rest of them, they were clean as can be.
I mean, you had the John Doe with the spikes.
Yeah, but you only saw a little bit of blood.
Yeah, nothing crazy. The head explosion is was incredible, and then there was really the Spencer thing with just him being stomped on by Freddy, and you just see him like jerking, and then I think he spit up like a little bit of blood. And that's about it.
Yeah, this was it was really not any gore in this movie at all, and I mean, I don't need to have gore in a horror movie, but when you're talking about a slasher, there needs to be blood. Where is it?
Yeah, this one, I think it was more playing on the psychological daddy issues than anything. And
okay, cool. That's about it. It's just, I don't know. I fucking hate this movie.
Again, I got all the questions.
I really don't have much else to say about it, because it's all going to just circle back around to, God, I fucking hate this movie. So, I'm just going to go ahead and give my skull rating if you're ready.
All right, I think, I think we're ready for this one.
Yeah, this one's like a 1.5. The only thing that even squeaks it out past like a 1 or 1.2 is the fact that the acting was actually pretty decent for everybody except for John Doe and Robert Englund. Like, those were bad performances.
And on top of that, we here at Creepin', we adore Robert Englund. He is a fantastic man.
This movie, he sucked in this movie.
It does. It does suck. And that's where it's like, you know what? It's like, Robert, it's like, we absolutely love you. Like, Phantom of the Opera is probably one of our other favorites. I mean, we met him at Spooky Empire. A delightful man. Like, he is a gem.
But he sucks in this movie.
He does. He's horrible in this movie. We're sorry, Robert.
But you sucked in this movie.
You're amazing.
And for anyone else who's listening, he really, really sucked in this movie. Yeah, those two performances were just trash, and they were our main characters. Those were the two, I mean, outside of Maggie. But, like, we're following John Doe around for two-thirds of this movie before Freddy finally kills him. It's like, he sucks. The special effects, they suck. The cartoon violence, it sucks. Everything about this movie, except for a few little bright spots that we discussed earlier, fucking sucks. I hate this movie. God damn. Like, the fact that Wes Craven circled it back around a few years later and did New Nightmare, which was very self-aware, and it was set in the real world, and it was very meta. It was a little ahead of its time, which is why it didn't do very well. It was 2 years before Scream. But, like, Wes Craven did some of his best work in the 90s. And New Nightmare, I would hold up as probably being the best original run Nightmare on Elm Street movie was that one. Full fucking stop.
Yeah, I mean, because it really played, like, he loved doing the, like, once, like, Scream and everything was
going. Well, this was pre-Scream, but this was him toying with those ideas before it became a thing. But, like, full stop. New Nightmare, best of the series. This one, the fucking dregs of the series. I hear people shit on Dream Child all the fucking time, and I understand the reasons why.
Hey, Freddy.
God, the old fucking but this is leaps and bounds worse than even Dream Child. And, like, okay, cool, you guys try to do something a little different with it, great. But what you did do different with it, it made the series worse. Like, it's just, it made it worse. Like, this is the hill you die on. This is the way you choose to go out, is with this rotting pile of dog shit? Are you serious right now? So, yeah, 1.5. Outside of really liking Leslie Dean in this movie, I have no other reason to watch it ever again. How about you?
Yeah, for me, I ended up giving this thing a 1.3. It's also very low. The one thing that I do have to say is this movie does bring up a lot of nostalgia for me because this was one of those movies that I watched as a kid, and I remember enjoying it as a kid because of a lot of the Looney Tunes stuff where it's like, oh, they're doing Looney, like, oh, I love video games.
Yeah, I mean, a kid would find this funny.
Exactly.
Like an 8-year-old, maybe.
And that's exactly what I was. And it was just the gimmicky stuff that was going on, Freddy being funny, and it wasn't enough to where, like, we could literally just let our 8-year-old watch this, and he would be like, oh my God, I love Freddy because of this. But now as an adult, oh, and also the big spike, sky falling scene, like, that is something that I remember being so shocked about, where it's like, oh my God, he landed on spikes and now he's, you know, got pools of blood and everything else. I was like, that really affected me. Well, it didn't affect me, but it was just like it got me. I was like, ooh, like, I was interested. And also, like, I mean, I was really into Mortal Kombat, so you know, the pit. So that was something where I got the nostalgia in this, but now as an adult watching it and really dissecting it for a podcast, I've never had my butthole pucker so much in my life, and just and it's just the tension of just like, why? Like, just that coming out, just the, why are you doing this?
For real?
Like, I don't understand. Like, what is going on? I mean, you got so many different, and as you said, like, a lot of the characters, the acting really was good. Like, yeah. it was right on point. And that's really why I gave it that 1.3, is mainly just because of the acting, but the story doesn't make sense for anything that is going on with the lore of Freddy, mm-hmm. because you just threw in so much shit and it doesn't fit.
Nope.
And that's where it's like it really struggles for me. And then on top of that, those actors that you got to really try to portray your story, one, you're either giving them information that is so on the nose that it really takes you out of the movie,
or it's you're not like, trusting your audience.
No, so
that's part of the problem.
And then on top of that, and like I said, they are like just some good ones there. But then yeah, it's like two on the nose, and then on top of that, where you end up getting too silly, and that really drives out all of the horror. This becomes more of just a
straight up comedy.
A comedy, and that's where it's not fun in that aspect, because you're expecting horror and all you're getting is comedy. If you're watching something like, oh, I don't know, Tucker and Dale, you know, versus Evil, or hell, even like Evil Dead.
Okay, yeah, you know? I'm going to pause you right there. When you're talking about a horror comedy is very difficult to get right. There is very few that you can point to that not only do it, but do it. They walk that line really well, and the balance is there. Tucker and Dale is one. American Werewolf in London is another.
Shaun
you
of
could
the
point
Dead.
To Shaun of the well, Shaun of the Dead's a little more on the comedy side, but it does pull in enough of the horror element to work okay. The Evil Dead 2.
Sorry, I have one. The Mask of Leslie Vernon.
That's a yes, but that's different. It's not a horror comedy per se. It's more of a mockumentary style kind of thing. It's different, but yeah, kinda. Yeah. But like, you can point to a handful of these movies that walk that line really well. If that's what they were trying to do here with Freddy's Dead, fucking F for failure and fuck you, because they didn't do it. They didn't do it. They pushed it so far into the comedy lane that when they did try to circle back around to horror, it fell flat on its face.
Yeah, agree.
Just couldn't do it. Yeah. They couldn't do it. They didn't do it. This movie is terrible. I'm done. Let's move on. What are we doing next week?
All right. So,
next week's a listener submission.
Listener submission. We got, well, I've had a couple people, you know, mention it to us, but nothing that was like, you know, wide known, but it's like the two that we got is from my buddy Brock and my buddy Nathan. We're doing Alone in the Dark. And they mentioned this to me, but I looked online and Alone in the Dark is slated to be one of the worst horror movies ever created.
Oh, okay.
It is... And this is one... I remember seeing the poster when I used to work at Hollywood Video back in the before times. And it never dawned on me to even attempt to go and see it. But Alone in the Dark is our next one. And I think I'm going to wear my hockey pads on this one. And it's like, I feel like I'm going to get stuff like thrown at me.
You know I'm going to beat you.
But yeah, it's, and that's the thing is with this dumpster fire month, it's not just for us to put ourselves through so much pain and torture. I actually wanted to have some fun and watching this and or watching all of these films to try and just dog shit on them. Not intentionally. But
and what are you talking about? Not intentionally.
Sorry.
What the fuck else are we gonna do with these?
I was waiting for the pop. No, but that's the thing. It's yes. We clearly these are all movies that we are knowing gonna hate. So that's the only way that you can, instead of it being like, oh my god, these people are just talking for an hour and it's just the worst negativity, you know, possible. No, we want to actually have some fun with it. Like, so that's the thing is, try and bring some type of positivity out of a bad situation. No? Yes? No? Meg? No? Yeah? She's like staring me down and just like, why?
I don't think I'm going to want to do the podcast with you anymore at the end of this month.
We're going to go back into some really good stuff after this. Like I said, this is...
Will we though?
Maybe. I don't know.
Will we? Because you're not allowed to set the schedule anymore. So yeah, join us next week when we do Alone in the Dark, and you might hear a homicide live on the air.
Hey.
So that'll be good times. In the meantime, hit the subscribe button so you can get that dumpster fire episode in your favorite podcatcher on Tuesday. Like, share, comment, any and all 5-star reviews, especially on iTunes, to beat the algorithm would be great.
Especially on these episodes.
Yep. Join us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher at CreepingItReal, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. You can email us at creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com to rail on Lunchbox and how stupid he is. And just a reminder, Christmas is only 7 weeks away at this point, so jump on the merch train, creepingitreal.redbubble.com, or click the link in the Instagram bio to go to our merch page, where you can get everything from t-shirts to home goods to socks and anything your little heart desires. Redbubble probably has it. And this time of the year, sign up for Redbubble's emails or download the app, where you're going to probably get note of the Black Friday sale, so you can jump on that plus coupons. So if you're a cheap bastard like me, that'll be your best friend. But in the meantime, I have been Meg.
I have been Lunchbox.
And please send help. Please.